Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Dr. Rita with us. Dr. Rita, why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay, so... And so I'm going to start with my professional introduction and then kind of shift gears to more where we're going to be going. You know, so I work as a naturopathic physician and a medical intuitive. So I do a lot of intuitive health assessments with people. And I do intuitive counseling, which includes helping people deal with recovering from trauma, dealing with like emotional dysregulation, whatever. I'll talk to you about pretty much anything. I mean, that's my thing. I have a PhD in natural health counseling and have been in this field for, I like saying over 20 years, a lot over 20 years. I'm the author of 7 books and have had a podcast. And before I do a live stream once a week now. It's not a guest related one, but a live stream nonetheless. And I, at this point in time, enjoy life and find that I'm really happy, which is weird. Even when crappy stuff happens, I'm still like happy.
I love that. Enjoying life is where it is at. So Dr. Rita. Yeah.
All right. I'll talk. You recover. You know, so then there's, you know, so on the outside, I just seem like, this really cool, I mean, I do a lot of stuff. People are just amazed. You know, I do my own webpage stuff. I write a lot of articles. You know, I do all of this stuff. But the reality is that I came from a family, very dysfunctional family. I grew up with a lot of trauma. That traumatic experience, I didn't realize, followed me into adulthood. And I've been, I'm going to say, dealing with myself, dealing with my own insecurities, dealing with my bad programming for years and years and years, which caused me to get into multiple relationships with narcissistic men. But I also came to realize that most of my really close relationships were also with narcissistic people, which was like, huh, okay. That was interesting, an interesting realization to have. How's that? And, you know, in the last few years, I know we're going to get into this more, so I'll just make this brief. You know, I just decided that I didn't want to do this anymore. You know, I just wanted to be happy. I just wanted to be comfortable in my own skin, because on the outside, I look great, but inside, not so much. And I didn't want to do that anymore.
I can relate to that. What was the aha moment that something had to change for you?
The last relationship I was in, okay, I have to like back it up a little bit. So I was with this guy who he was a drunk. I'll just say that. And it was my first experience really dealing with someone who was an alcoholic, and he was very needy. And when that relationship ended, that's when I came to the realization that all of my relationships pretty much were with narcissistic people, and I just kept attracting these people that just took. I mean, there was never this balance. There was never a 50-50, and it wasn't even a 60-40. It was usually like a 80-20, or a 90-10, where I'm giving it all away and they're not participating particularly. So that relationship ended, and I love researching. I love investigating. So I did this deep dive into the whole concept of narcissists and the dynamics in a relationship, where I thought I had solved all of my personal relationship problems, ended up getting into, and literally that book, and it's called The Dysfunctional Dance of the Empath and Narcissist. That book literally ended with me meeting this new guy. You're going to laugh at me. You're going to so laugh at me. And the last chapter was like a message of hope, and I meet this guy and I am literally having red flags pop up everywhere. And now that I read it again, like read what got printed, it's like there were red flags everywhere and I chose to ignore every single one of them. Every single one. Get into this relationship, let him move into my house. And it was like, no, this ain't working. You need to go. And at that point in time, all I really wanted was to be happy. And I came to the realization that I couldn't get that happiness from somebody else or through somebody else. And the only one left standing was me. And so, and one of the things that I had learned was, a lot of the times you end up getting into a relationship because you don't want to be alone or you don't want to be lonely, and so, and not that I was desperate, but I don't know. And so that was one of my goals was what do I need to do to be happy, but also be content with myself and not have somebody else around. That's another deep dive in
That's
another
a
book.
whole deep dive, Dr. Rita. But no, what's interesting, and because we've had a conversation pre-recording, like I recognize that there's this history for you, the trauma that was in at ch like in your childhood and as you grew, that compounded trauma with being with narcissists, being surrounded with narcissists, because even having friends as narcissists, it presents that trauma presents the same way, right? Was this, were you able to recognize what you were seeking in these relationships?
That's a great question. It's something I've never thought of. So my take on it. So when I would sit there and view a relationship, my thing was, you can't hit me. That's an automatic, you're gone. And you can't yell at me. Because that was really, there was a lot, there was violence in my history as a child. I've heard stories of people that have had way more physical abuse, but there was a lot of like mental and emotional abuse that happened, with a lot of yelling. And so those were kind of my two major things, like if you do these things, I don't want to be here. And then after that, it was, I mean, I'm a pretty easygoing person, but I think let me kind of shift this. I have seven brothers and sisters. And so when you are surrounded and have to cohabitate with so many different personalities, you learn to accept a lot. You ex learn to accept a lot of behaviors and a lot of dynamic because you can't be mad forever, especially when you're young. It's kind of like, okay, you were really mean to me. And if I knew you outside of the family, I probably wouldn't be your friend. But you're my sister. And so I have to like get over myself so that we can live together. I mean, I can be mad for a while, And so you learn this, I learn this behavior where you can do this stuff and I'll get over it. You know, and I always took it on myself that I'll get over it and never learn that there should be a boundary that they need to stop.
That's interesting. Very interesting. Now, when we spoke earlier, we talked about that dance, your sixth book, The Dance Between the Narcissist and the Empath. And from my understanding, and please correct me if I'm incorrect, that most narcissists and most empaths are created as a result of trauma.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's really our trauma response, right? Like being able to, if you've endured trauma, most people become very hypervigilant. So they are able, as a result, they are able to pick up on the changes that the average person would not. Whereas a narcissist experienced trauma and they felt the need to make everything about them because of what they were lacking. Or that experience. Can we expand on that a bit?
Sure. So, you know, the way that I like to explain the empathic part, so a person that's an empath is just really sensitive to the energy around them, the vibration around them. You know, and people are like, oh, well, you're born that way. And you could be born sensitive. I know, like, compared to my brothers and sisters, I'm way more sensitive. But if you grow up in a house where there's dysfunction going on, you hone the skill. So, as an example, like my parents didn't have drinking issues, but I think people will hear this. So, let's say dad's an alcoholic, you know, and you're in your room and you're playing, you got your Barbies out and you're doing whatever you're doing, and you hear the door open and it's 5 o'clock and dad is going to be coming through the door and you're tentacles go out. Is he drunk? Is there going to be some thing happening? And so that you can brace yourself for that kind of thing. And so you learn how to feel into the environment and feel into people so that you can be safe. That's really sad, but so that you can be safe. And if you think about it, if you move out of your parents' house when you're 18, you've had 18 years of experience in being able to filter out what's going on. Now, the narcissist, on the other hand, they're not interested in particularly healing their wounding. You know, they're just more interested in shoving it down. And actually, I'm doing a presentation tomorrow called The Battle of the Soul. And one of the things that it comes out of Jewish mysticism is this idea, and I probably am totally not saying this word right, called kelipots, you know, and what they are like shells that we put around ourselves. And so, kind of like the Russian nesting dolls, you know, there's the little teeny doll, and then that fits into another doll, and that fits into another doll. So, your authentic self is that little teeny doll on the inside. But as life experiences happen, and there's negative programming that happens, you develop more and more and more and more of these shells. But one of the things that these shells do, okay, so when we're born, we can connect to source, we can connect to higher vibrating emotions, we can interact with God, you know, and I'm just saying that in a kind of generic way. But as these shells form, it takes the divine light and it starts to filter it and cover it up and cover it up and cover it up so that by the time you have so many shells, you start moving into that narcissistic area because you can no longer, and this sounds terrible, you can no longer feed on the life force energy that the universe provides, and you have to start taking it, not receiving it, but taking it from other people, you know, and it could be the positive part of that love bombing. It's like, oh, I love you. And now you're, you know, because you're wounded and you want to experience love and want to experience affection. are all about this guy who professes his undying love to you. So now you're pouring out all of your love energy to this person and attention and affection until it changes. And then instead of getting you to give this high vibrating energy, because they're really not picky, it's like they'll do things to hurt your emotional space and they still will draw that energy from you because you are emoting. You know, they just want you to emote. Positive, negative, they really don't care. They just want you to emote. And that's how they sustain themselves, which is just like conceptually is awful.
It is awful, and I actually really love how you describe that because narcissism, in my opinion, has become a very big buzzword. And everybody and their cousin are narcissists if they do you wrong. But I think it's very interesting to understand how that first develops, right? Like I can't even think of the name, but the Russian egg example, that was a great example. And the depiction of that, I think, really stands firm in how they don't operate from a space of authenticity most times. It's this character that they create. And as you peel away the layers, you realize you're just being introduced to new characters based on what they perceive you desire. It's like this game that happens, and it's very hard, if ever, to really get to that core. Now, obviously, when we are empaths, we pick up on things, but we probably are less guarded with our energy without recognizing that, right? So it makes sense for why there seems to be this huge magnetic field around empaths in relation to narcissists because of the energy that's being
The exchange. Yeah.
emoted. Yes.
Well, and one of the things, and this kind of came across my screen, I think, on Facebook, which I knew, but people that tend to be empaths tend to see the world, I don't want to say with rose-colored glasses, but with hope. They see the world with hope.
And
And there's a
optimism.
part of them that cannot believe that another person could actually be that way, even though they might have that experience, but it's like there's a lack of understanding that there are people that are just that way.
How do we shift that narrative? And I say we because I recognize, I would say I identify as being empath, and I recognize that it comes as a result of the trauma that I experienced, and I can almost pinpoint where it started for me. So how do we shift that narrative?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you what not to do because I learned this one. Because I thought, because in addition to being very sensitive, I mean, I work as an intuitive. And so, you know, that's even more. And so my old strategy, you know, like something would happen and I could just feel the bad vibes coming from the other person, which would make me feel terrible. And so that sometimes is the motivation for the empath. Is to, I feel terrible. And so I would sit there and go, okay, well, what do I need to do to make you feel better? Because if you feel better, then I'm going to feel better. And I've come to learn that that is not a good strategy, you know, because you're saying, I love you more and I'm more willing to take care of you than I'm willing to take care of myself and my own needs and my own feelings. You know, but again, that's a trauma thing, you know, because usually in those kind of in dysfunctional families, it's like you're not allowed to have feelings, you're not allowed to have a voice, you're not allowed, you're just this object over there. And so changing it is really, you know, and I'm going to say it this way, but we can break it down definitely more. is about learning to love yourself and learning to say, I have value, and learning to recognize that they aren't the king of me, but and so, awareness as to what is going on is really the key. So one of the things that, in my book, just the dysfunctional dance of the empath and narcissist, that was the follow-on when I discovered that I hadn't fixed myself. One of the things that I talk about in that is when you're in a relationship with someone, and it can be a friend relationship, it doesn't have to be romantic, that if something happens that you feel, okay, actually, I'm going to back this up. So when we're feeling happy, when we're feeling joyful, when we're feeling any kind of positive emotion, we feel good. We tend to be present. We're not triggered. Our inner critic isn't going crazy. We're not ruminating. We're not worrying. All of those things that come along with trauma. But it's usually, so we can be the most zen person if we're sitting on a mountain by ourselves. It's when we have to interact with other people that the games start to begin. And so if you're having an interaction with someone and you feel your energy dipping, so I'm like, oh, I'm having a great day. I went to the store and I got like this leather coat for $3 and I'm all happy. And then you start talking to somebody and that happiness and joy you have starts going, then you need to stop and go, well, what's going on? And so my personal thing is I have purgatory. So in the Catholic religion, I was brought up Catholic, not that I'm Catholic, but I was brought up that way. And purgatory was kind of this holding place where you went to. You didn't go to heaven, but you didn't go to hell. So to me, it was a great representation of, am I going to let you stay in my life or am I kicking you out? So they go to purgatory, and then it gives you the opportunity to kind of step back and look at the dynamics. We all have bad days, we all go through stuff. Meaning the other person. And so maybe their whatever they did was because, they went to work and got yelled at by the boss, and then they got a flat tire, and there might be things going on that caused them to be mean to you. And there are circumstances, but you need to be aware of that. And then give the situation, the person, the relationship, the opportunity to keep going to see if that is the behavior. Because if that is the behavior, then you need to go, is this something that I want to do? Is this something that I want to deal with? Is there more of this than there is of the positive things happening? Because if my energy is constantly being dropped down and moved into a negative place, I don't want that. At least that's my thing. It's, if you're going to bring my energy down anymore, it's kind of like, nope. My goal is for me
Exactly.
to be happy, and I'm not going to be a bitch about it, but.
I want to be happy. You brought up two really important points. I'm going to start with the self-love element, right? I think a reconciliation for me in my struggle with choosing me, coming out of survival mode and choosing me was the reconciliation that I didn't love myself enough. And I actually was, my mom came, I was arrested on my job one day. A whole another story, but my mom came to the jail and she said to me, "Why do you love everyone else more than you love yourself?" And that was like a Mike Tyson body blow. But there was this reconciliation that, like, I'm giving all of me to these people who aren't giving me even a quarter of them. I'm exhausted. I'm carrying pain. I'm surviving a life simply because I'm not loving myself enough. And I think, sometimes it seems, what am I trying to say here? It comes across awful when someone will say to you, "You don't love yourself enough." But as I now recognize that I as a result of the trauma that I've experienced, I have developed into an empath to survive, essentially. It wasn't that I didn't love myself. I didn't know how to prioritize my love for myself ahead of other people. The second thing that you mentioned that I thought was very interesting is I stated there are three phases to exiting survival mode. The first one being awareness. And I loved how you then said, well, I have this awareness now, and I'm going to place them into purgatory until I can make the decision whether or not this is good for me. That is an important step because the awareness changes everything. And oftentimes we're operating from a place where we can't even see that someone's actions are draining our energy, are changing the way that we feel, and impacting our emotions. So it's really important for someone maybe who has spent a lot of time in survival mode, not thriving, on autopilot, operating in this space where they find themselves attracting narcissists, and they may too identify with being an empath, being able to identify, have that awareness to change or to pause and perhaps examine further whether or not the situations that they are in are actually serving them.
Well, and one of the things about becoming more aware is as you see either them doing the same thing or you doing the same thing, because it's not necessarily that they're always doing stuff. It might be that you're reacting inappropriately based on your trauma, you know, and there was a point to this, you know, oh, you know, but as you become more aware, you know, I like to say, be curious. It's kind of like, okay, I'm reacting, but is it, am I reacting because of my old stuff? Or am I reacting because they did something? Because sometimes they might just sit there and say, it's a rainy day and, you know, you're off the handle. And that it's not, it's a nothing burger that they did. But what I have found is that when people start to become more aware of what's going on, they get tired of it and they're more likely to sit there and say, you know what, I'm done and move on, you know, or move to change things within themselves, whether that is end a relationship, whether that is to speak up, whether that is to, you know, whatever that happens to be. But and it becomes more of a pressing point because it's in your face. It's like, okay, this is the 50th time this person's done this to me, you know, and I don't want to do this anymore, you know, and I think people get tired of it. We all get tired of it, but you can't even recognize you're tired of it unless you're aware that it's happening.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, based on my own experience, right, the relationship dynamic between a narcissist and an empath, I feel puts the empath in survival mode because they aren't able to operate in their fullness because the energy, the emotions, and everything is pretty much being sucked out and used to the narcissist's good. So I think actually this has been a really interesting conversation because it's actually been a duality here. We've been talking about two things at the same time, which actually mirror each other. So how can we find you online, Dr. Rita?
So the easiest way to find me is by going to my webpage, which is soulhealer.com, soulhealer.com, soulhealer.com. And there are a bunch of articles about relationships and relationship dynamics and emotional healing that are available. You can find all of my books there on the website. You know, they're also available on Amazon. I mean, they're all available on Amazon or Barnes and Noble or whatever. But if you order it off the website, they all come signed. So that's priceless right there. And as an introduction, on Thursday nights, I do a live stream. It's called Thursday Night Live with Dr. Rita Louise. And the easiest place for people to access it is on YouTube. And so if you go to my YouTube channel, which is called Just Energy Radio, and that's three words, Just Energy Radio, 7 p.m. Central every Thursday night. And I'm there and I open with like a 15-minute discussion of a topic. And then I make it where people can come and get a free on-air psychic reading.
Okay.
I mean,
Well,
it's really fun.
yeah, we'll definitely have to give it a go. Give it a come and join you. I will have all of the information in the show notes. So before we wrap it up today,
Yes, ma'am.
one key takeaway for the listeners.
Deer in headlights. No, just give me one second. No, I think the one that I want to share is be curious. If there's something going on inside, because the reality is it's all about what's going on inside of us. Do we feel good? Do we feel bad? And if we're feeling bad, why? What is bringing that on? And be curious about it and be creative about it. Maybe journal about it. Maybe pray about it. Maybe meditate about it. But be curious because you will get the answers and insights that you're looking for that can help you take your next step.
Curiosity doesn't always kill the cat, listeners. It can definitely take you down an interesting journey of self-exploration and freedom. Dr. Rita, thank you so much for your time on the episode. Listeners, thank you for catching Survival Mode Disrupted. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break. But you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.